Hi, I'm Greg Lefebvre, and this is The Compulsive Storyteller, a series of short personal stories where we explore the idea that truth can be stranger than fiction. This week's episode is entitled 420 Drug Dealing Dad. Ganja, skunk, herb and dope, marijuana, broccoli, Mary Jane and smoke, cannabis, spliffs, green and bush, reefer pot, Thai sticks and kush. Oh, damn, that's good pot. There are many different origin stories about the association of marijuana with the number 420. The most probable involves a group of students in California in 1971 attending San Rafael High School who would meet up at 420 after school by the sculpture of Louis Pasteur, then head out to look for unattended pot planters and marijuana fields. My dad, you may have met in episode 1 of The Compulsive Storyteller, entitled Pipe Dreams, where I tried unsuccessfully to make him 420 friendly. Years later, after working most of his life in upstate New York, he ends up retiring to a trailer park for double wide with his second wife, Winnie, on the ocean in Vero Beach, Florida. He calls the place Zero Beach because nothing ever happens there. The story that follows puts an end to his theory about the place. Winnie has a second sense when it comes to trouble. And after my dad rides up to their trailer one day on a big, fat, brand-new Harley-Davidson Electroglide, she hits the ceiling of their trailer, albeit a low one. "Bill, you're a retired AT&T executive and know nothing about riding a big motorcycle." He ignores her entreaty and, instead of listening, mounts the bike, puts up the kickstand, stomps on the kickstarter, twists the throttle, and off he goes, accelerating down the asphalt trailer park roadway toward the sea, following an uncertain, meandering path. He doesn't come back for several hours. When he does, he's returned to their trailer by the local police, who simply drop him off out front. When he enters, Winnie demands, "Where were you, Bill? I've been worried sick." He doesn't answer, instead takes out a beer and flops into his Barca lounger, only to yell out in pain, and clutches behind, "Ah! And why did the police drive you home?" Again, silence on my dad's part. "And where's your motorcycle?" It takes Winnie the better part of a week to get him to confess that while rounding a sandy curve at low speed, the bike slid out from under him and he ended up burning his ass sitting on top of the hot side of the engine as the bike sparked along sideways underneath until finally it came to a stop. It was a miracle that aside from the humiliating burns, he didn't get a scratch. The Harley, however, did not fare so well. What he did not tell Winnie was that he paid a small fortune for the bike and ended up reselling it a week after he bought it for half of what he paid for it. After all, a man does have his pride. A month after the Harley debacle, his new activity every morning at sunrise is to leave the trailer park and walk along the beach with a local golf course to his left and often a spectacular, almost biblical sunrise spreading out over the ocean to his right. This morning, with a light surf lapping the beach, he comes upon a long, large, box-shaped object wrapped in green garbage bag material with silver duct tape crisscrossing it in several places. It's being washed back and forth in the surf. On its top is a small red light, which most probably was flashing at one point. Such bales, usually under cover of darkness, are thrown overboard by the dozens from passing ships with or without the captain's permission. Smaller boats then look for the flashing lights and pick them up. My father wades into the water up to his knees and manages to snag one of the duct tape straps and tries to drag it ashore. It's very heavy, and he only manages to pull it just above the high water line before he has to stop to rest. He has to do this several more times before he manages to pull it into a wooded area of unkempt brush, bushes, and palm debris that lays between the beach and the golf course. He walks back to the waterline and with his bare feet does his best to erase the shallow trench he's dug while dragging his bundle. Clearly, he has a pretty good idea of what he's found. Next, he camouflages it with various palm fronds and the like, looking at it from different angles and adding and subtracting his cover. Finally, he heads home, and as he moves along, he walks faster and faster because he's very excited by the prospect of calling me to describe what he's found. Luckily, Winnie's gone to her morning stretch class. When he calls, I answer, "Hello?"
"Hi, Greg, it's your father."
"Dad, it's like 6:30 in the morning. Are you sick or something?"
"No, I'm good, but my back is a little strained this morning, which is why I called."
"Is it the same old problem?" He cuts me off.
"No, it's not that. I just found a big bale of marijuana washed up on the beach. I dragged it into some bushes, and then I thought, Greg will know what to do with this."
"Wow, amazing, Dad. How heavy would you say it is?"
"I don't know, maybe 150 pounds, maybe more."
"And did you open it?"
"No, I just covered it up very well and came home to call you."
Well, let's start by having you go back at sunrise tomorrow morning when no one will be around and bring a box cutter, some packing tape, and a backpack. You'll slice open the bale at the corner so you don't damage the smaller blocks inside. Reseal the bale very well so the smell won't attract any passing dogs or people. Then bring a block back to the trailer and call me when Winnie's not around. The next morning I get a call from Dad.
"Hey man, it's still pretty early to be calling."
"Good morning. Is this the head of the Sinaloa cartel? Your lieutenant here calling with a field report."
"Don't jinx me, man. You know what happens to almost every cartel leader. So how big's the block?"
"A little smaller than a cigar box."
"So slit it carefully along one edge and pull out a little."
"Okay, done."
"Is it gummy or dry?"
"Gummy."
"Great.
Oh no, I gotta get out of here. Winnie just pulled in the driveway."
Winnie enters the trailer. "It smells like skunk in here. Did you have a run-in on your walk?" "No," Dad smiles nervously. Winnie takes him by both shoulders and looks him straight in the eye. "What's going on with you, Bill?" He can't help himself and blurts out, "I found a big bale of marijuana on the beach and hid it by the golf course and called Greg. He's going to come down here and take it back to New York City and we'll all be rich." Winnie clucks her tongue and shakes her head from side to side. "Bill Lefebvre, if you get your son involved in this and he ends up in prison, you will never forgive yourself. You could end up in prison as well, and at your age that would be a life sentence. And what about me? Am I supposed to live alone for the rest of my life because my husband's in jail? Are you listening to me?" Damn, Winnie. Ah, you're right. With that, he collapses like a deflating balloon into his Barca lounger, burying his face in his hands. Damn it! Dad disheartedly trudges back across to where he's hidden the stash, uncovers it, and sits on the bale to collect his thoughts. Then walks across the golf course to the pro shop, where he asks the manager to call both the cops and the local newspaper. He smartly figures that it might be wise to have some press coverage to prevent the police from stealing any of the weed. When the police arrive, he tells them his story, and they drive their cruiser down a service road to the beach and then along to where the bale is buried in the bushes. He gets one of them to shoot a couple of photos of the senior officer and himself, each with a foot up on opposite ends of the bale, to document his heroic deed. The headline of the Vero Beach Press Journal reads, "Vero Beach Man Discovers Huge Stash of Marijuana." Bill Lefebvre, who walks the beach every morning near his mobile home park on South Beach, poses here with a Vero Beach police officer with what is estimated to be a 200-pound bale of pot he found along the beach. When asked what the bale would be worth, the officer was unwilling to make a guess, but he did say, "One heck of a lot of money." Epilogue. It's funny. The whole bale of weed incident happened some 40 years ago, and my dad has long since passed away. Rest his soul. But every year on 420, my mind is drawn back to those events, and every year I can't help but review and perfect what I would have done had I gone ahead with the pickup. Shave off my beard, get a short haircut but not a skinhead, buy a cheap suit, think traveling salesman, pick up the weed in a low-end rental car, and drive it to New York City, then find a place to hide the stash in my industrial art studio there. Also, to avoid detection by police drug-sniffing dogs, repackage it with layers of Glad Wrap, alternating dog repellent and talcum powder in between, and changing to new plastic gloves with each layer. This woulda, shoulda, coulda review has become an annual ritual, putting me in a state of reverie as I go over each step of the plan. But the rub is always the same one. When I'm meeting up with some sketchy characters to exchange 180 pounds of pot for a briefcase full of $100 bills. There is just no foolproof way to do it. When my dad sent me the clipping with the photo from the Vero Beach Press Journal back then, he carefully wrote in script diagonally across the face of it, "Paradise Lost." Oh, damn, that's good pot. Are you ready to tell your own story on The Compulsive Storyteller? We're launching a new segment of guest storytelling, and we want to hear your stories. Email a voice recording to hello@thecompulsivestoryteller.com. I'll play selected stories on upcoming episodes. Try to be as clear as possible in your recording, and we reserve the right to lightly edit them for length and clarity. Leave your name or contact information in your voicemail or email, and let us know if you'd like the story to be anonymous. I can't wait to hear from you. The Compulsive Storyteller is now co-produced by Greg Lefebvre and Fadia Monserrath, who's also arranged the music and created the special effects. Emily Ramone does design, research, editing, and marketing. Peter Kakoma has made our theme music and for many seasons co-produced the show with me. If you enjoyed this week's episode, let us know. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Compulsive Storyteller, and we'd love to hear from you. This podcast is independently produced, so we really appreciate all your help and support. Share the show with your friends, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave a review. You can also check out our website, thecompulsivestoryteller.com, for more information. Thanks for listening, and if you didn't like this one, the next one will be another story. All characters and events portrayed in this podcast are based on my truth, with some names and facts changed for privacy. The conversations and dialogues are based on my best memory, but are not word-for-word recreations.